For more than 50 years, physiotherapists have used electronic patches stuck onto the skin to stimulate nerve activity and to ease muscular pain. Now, someone's had the bright idea of sticking it onto the forehead to see if it eases migraine pain. The bad news is it looks pretty odd. The good news is, in some cases, it actually works. Our science reporter Chris Smith has the news. He joins us from Cambridge in the UK. Chris, hello there.
Morning, Fran.
Now, Chris, this sounds so simple when we say it out loud. Why hasn't this been thought of before, or has it?
Well, why indeed? It's a very interesting study, though. It's published in the journal Neurology, and it's by a group of researchers from Belgium. This is Jean Schoenen and his colleagues. They're at Liège University. And what they did in their simple study was they recruited 67 people who are dubbed regular migraineurs. In other words, they're people with professional headaches. These individuals suffer regularly with really disabling migraines. So obviously intervention to stop that is really important in this group of people. And what they did was to equip them with a pad, which they could put onto their forehead. And in fact, the patients are in two groups, because although they got identical pads to stick on, half of the pads were what the team dub a sham pad. This system delivers a small amount of electricity, but nothing like the stimulation that the people in the verum, the real group, are going to get. And what these people did was to deliver 20 minutes of stimulation to their forehead every morning, whether or not they had a headache at the time. And the researchers asked them to keep a log of how many days with migraines they experienced, and also how much migraine medication they were using. Those results then compared to a 30-day period before the intervention, when the individuals just logged how many headaches they had, to see if a positive difference arose. What they found was actually quite stunning. In fact, the number of migraine days fell in the intervention group, in other words, the people getting the real stimulation with about 60 milliamps of current, by 30%. And this was mirrored in a reduction in their migraine medication, which fell 37% compared with levels that were relatively unchanged in the group that got the sham stimulators. And of course, no patient knew whether they were getting the real stimulation or the sham, the cheat stimulation as the control. They don't actually know, and they say in the paper, we don't know how this works, but they were able to demonstrate that it's definitely stimulating the trigeminal nerve, the nerve that supplies the face and forehead. And for that reason, they think that it's delivering some kind of nerve information into initially the brainstem, but then also possibly to clusters of nerve cells that are determining interpretation of pain, or possibly also interfering with the parts of the brain that go into abnormal patterns of brain activity that trigger migraines in the first place. Whatever is going on, it definitely works.
Well, gee, imagine if this is the breakthrough, if this can make such a difference. I don't suffer migraines, but my friends who do, it's just crippling, isn't it? Chris, one of my enduring memories of being a little kid is playing with my little brother. One day he was about two or something, maybe even younger. We're just playing outside in the dirt. I looked up and he had caterpillar, furry caterpillar all over his mouth because he'd eaten a caterpillar on the ground. This goes to the fact that we were outside playing in the dirt. And I think these days that doesn't happen so much. It's a mixture of things. It's the way people live, the places they live in, but also we keep our kids a bit more on cotton wool these days. And now there's some new research suggesting getting filthy is just what the doctor ordered for kids.
That might certainly be the case. There's an interesting paper. It's in the journal Immunity, and it's by Mark Davis, who's a real pioneer of how the immune system works. He works in Stanford in California. And what he did was to go and get blood samples from adults who were giving blood in the blood donor clinic, and he got the white blood cells out of those samples. And specifically, he was looking at a class of white blood cells called T cells, or CD4 T cells. These are the immune orchestrators. They recognize bad stuff, and then they secrete various stimulators that direct or orchestrate other components of the immune response to attack the pathogen. And so when you look at someone who's had an infection, you will find that they've got lots of these T cells that recognize very specifically the infection they've had. And after they clear that infection, they make T cells that are called memory T cells. And those memory T cells lurk in your system for the rest of your life. And if you catch something, they very quickly come out of retirement. They very rapidly divide, make lots of T cells capable of marshalling a very powerful immune response. So he said, well, that's fine. We would have expected to find T cells that can recognize various infections in these adults. And when he looked in babies' umbilical cords, you could also find T cells there that could attack similar sorts of bugs that they were looking for, except they weren't memory cells in these babies. So far, so good. But actually, when he looked in the blood of the adults, he found that there were lots of these memory T cells that recognized infections that many of these adults had never had, including things like HIV. They never caught HIV, so why would they have cells that you would only normally make if you had actually caught the infection? And then they realised that what's probably happening, and this may explain why babies are so much more vulnerable to certain infections than adults are, is that over a lifetime of infection experience, when we catch something, usually something benign which is fairly self-limiting and not that harmful, what it actually probably is doing to your immune system is driving not just an immune response against that one thing, but also an immune response against related things which are closely similar to that thing you've caught, or even cells that are quite different to the thing you've caught but are not part of you. And so what they're saying is that actually getting a lot of infections or playing in the dirt, getting a lot of other exposures, probably does drive quite a good immune response that's very broad, and actually therefore this obsession with sterility we're all living in may be part of the reason why actually we're not so healthy as we used to be. He likens it to, in the same way that the brain has to see, you have to be exposed so your eye sees things and patterns your visual system for the brain to develop normally. He says the immune system needs stimulation in the same way to develop normally itself.
Okay, fantastic. And Chris, just finally, salmon, as we know, swim upstream to spawn in the place they were born. And now we've got a better understanding of how they do that. What's the news?
Yes, how do they find the river that they were born in? This is a study in Current Biology this week by Nathan Putnam, who's at the Oregon State University, and they were looking at fisheries records of sockeye salmon that come to the Fraser River in British Columbia. And to get up that river, they've got to go around Vancouver Island. And Vancouver Island is this big landmass. It's about 300 miles long by about 50 miles wide. And the thing is, the fish have to take the north route or the south route around that island. Now, how do the fish actually know to get there? Are they following magnetic field lines? Well, what the researchers did was to look at the fisheries records and then look at how much the Earth's magnetic field had varied over the time that the fish were coming and going in this river. And because it's such a big land area, there are often subtle differences in the magnetic field lines in the North Channel or the South Channel. And if the fish are looking for the river mouth in terms of its magnetic field pattern that they would have remembered when they left the river, they're going to take the channel which is most similar now when they're returning to the magnetic field they remember when they left. And so by doing this study where they're looking at the channel which has got the least difference to the river mouth at any given time and looking where the fish go, you see this really, really statistically strong correlation between where the fish go and where the magnetic field is least similar. So it looks like these fish, when they leave the river when they're very young, they imprint on their brain the magnetic pattern of the river mouth, and then they come back looking for it when they return to spawn as adults.
So clever, isn't it? Chris, thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks, Fran. Bye-bye.
Dr. Chris Smith, he's a virologist from Cambridge University and our regular science correspondent. It's 6:45 on Breakfast. James is up next.